It is a State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here as we have the newly retired chief of the State Veterans Affairs Agency, Mary Kolar, with us. Take a look back on the key issues of her tenure since being appointed by Governor Tony Evers in 2019. And we take stock of what the new secretary will need to address head on. Join in on veterans issues, mental health, housing, workforce, the care of veterans at nursing facilities. That's where we begin our conversation. 800-642-1234. Former Secretary Mary Kolar, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's good to be here.
Well, let's start with the deaths of the two men at the Wisconsin Veterans Home at King in 2021. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published a report last month that faulted the state VA in these deaths. Does the department bear some responsibility for them?
So I am not able to comment on specific cases. Those are cases that are continuing to be looked at by various entities. So I just want to emphasize that whoever may be researching a skilled nursing facility for their loved one, that they take the time to do their research. When the Journal Sentinel did articles, I pointed out that it's good that people are paying attention to the worldwide healthcare worker shortage that we have. Our homes, like every other healthcare facility, and particularly skilled nursing facilities, are facing a workforce shortage. It existed before the pandemic. It has been exacerbated by the pandemic. People who are the front line of battling against the pandemic, they're tired and sadly not as appreciated as they should be. So we are doing all that we can to ensure that we compensate fairly our staff, we are competitive, and also that they have the state benefits that are one of the advantages that the state has. But again, I want to emphasize that our skilled nursing facilities are three state veterans homes in King, Union Grove, and Chippewa Falls are all unique, as they all are. Take a look and realize that actually our home at Chippewa Falls has won 2 years in a row national awards. Our home at King has been there since 1887. It is a phenomenal, very beautiful place. Our home at Union Grove is getting better all the time. In fact, one of the people who the Journal Sentinel featured in their article this in 2022, this resident said when he was asked by leaders of state veterans organizations who I hosted at the home so they could gather their facts of how good of a home Union Grove is. This resident said about Union Grove, "Is it perfect here? No, but show me a skilled nursing home that is perfect." Mm. But Union Grove is very close. So again, I just want to go ahead.
Well, I want to drill down just a little bit there on Union Grove and the situation that you are raising around filling vacant positions. Looking at the data here, 2021, the Union Grove facility had a retention rate of around 30% for nurse aides and 25% retention for part-time licensed practical nurses. That's according to the Department of Health Services on that report. What's being done to improve the retention rate?
Yes, and realize that in 2021, so we were coming out of the pandemic, and I'm quite confident that you can compare those rates to other healthcare facilities. And whether it's CNAs or RNs or therapists, every type of healthcare, we have a healthcare crisis in our country, and we need to address it. It starts in our educational facilities and through the training of onboarding people when they come in. So we have focused, particularly at Union Grove and our other homes, on making sure that our new staff get the training they do, that they need to be able to do their jobs and to be able to do them correctly.
We're talking with Mary Kolar, newly retired as Secretary of Veterans Affairs last week. You can join in the conversation about veterans in your lives and what you'd like to bring up, 800-642-1234. Looking at the budget, 2023 to 2025, you requested an 8.8% budget increase for the departmental biennial budget. Why is this increase necessary?
Well, as we have just talked about with our health care, people may not realize that the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, that 84% of our budget is our homes. Mm. So with the health care costs that are increasing and want to, again, compensate our staff well and cover our costs that are continuing to rise, we need that extra revenue. I'm very pleased with Governor Evers and the budget that he has proposed in these last 4 years, and that I anticipate he will do when he provides his budget for the next biennium. He has focused on veterans, most recently last year when he had the Blue Ribbon Commission on Veteran Opportunity. And so in addition to focusing on our homes, our other focuses is on mental health of our veterans and working with our partners throughout the state, including county veteran service officers and tribal veteran service officers. We work with our other agency partners like the Department of Administration and the Department of Workforce Development. The DWD has Hire Heroes program. So the governor's investments, over $10 million based on the recommendations from the Blue Ribbon Commission. We gathered almost 30 veteran advocates together, and the governor listened to the recommendations of that commission.
Mm. One more thing before we do move on from nursing homes. Your budget shows that the annual percentage of nursing home beds occupied last year was 67%. The goal occupancy was 89%. Why did it fall so short?
Well, as skilled nursing facilities have been in the news because of the pandemic, there is hesitancy, whether it's state veterans homes or other skilled nursing facilities, to go into a home. But please also know that we are veterans homes. You need to be a veteran or an eligible family member. And the largest cohort of veterans that our country seen in the last century were World War II veterans. After the World War II veterans, sadly, who have passed, it's the amount of veterans, the number of veterans and demographics, decrease significantly. So we are preparing our homes for the future where we will be serving fewer veterans because there will be fewer veterans. But also with, for example, the opening of our new hall at King Moses Hall, it's a state-of-the-art single occupancy rooms. We learned a lot of lessons from the pandemic. So smaller sizes are likely what people will focus on. Again, learning lessons from the pandemic, not having people mingled. If you actually look at other state veterans homes, those who did not do as well as we did through the pandemic, most often it was because of shared rooms and not separating people quickly enough when there was an illness.
Outgoing Veterans Affairs Secretary Mary Kolar with us, retired from state service 1 week ago. Call in with your questions for her, your stories, your solutions for supporting veterans. They're welcome to 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the newly retired Veterans Affairs Secretary, Mary Kolar, who led the agency that serves Wisconsin's over 300,000 veterans and their families. Join in with questions about veterans' benefits, health and housing issues, how you think the state could best lift up military families. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Marcus in Milwaukee is with us. Marcus, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning, Kate. So I never served in the military. I'm 43 years old. I have a lot of friends who do. To all you vets out there, I would like to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for the freedom that you provide as the blanket that my kids and I are able to sleep under so comfortably. My next question is, because I do have friends that fought in Iraq and Afghanistan, my question would be is, what do you anticipate would be the path forward to the lung issues for vets from cancer, from burn pits overseas?
Marcus, thank you. Mary Kolar.
Yes, thank you, Marcus, for asking that question. People hopefully are aware of the PACT Act and the eligibility that veterans now have, veterans who were exposed to burn pits and other potentially carcinogenic entities, air, whatever, that they experienced when they were deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I really strongly encourage people to contact their county veteran service officer, their tribal veteran service officer, or call 1-800-WIS-VETS and gather the information. Get online and check out what the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has about burn pits and exposures to other chemicals, and do the research. Use these benefits that are available. Sadly, you will see ads for people who are saying to call them, law firms that are will take some of the money that the veterans earn, compensation that they may be entitled to. You will not have that happen if you use a government entity. Again, a county veteran service officer, a tribal veteran service officer, using WDVA, a person at USDVA claims. Use the services that are available, that are there for you, and that you do not have to pay a lawyer for. I can't emphasize that enough, because there are people out there who are trying to take advantage of the PACT Act legislation and for financial gain. Iraq, Afghanistan, still veterans from Vietnam who were exposed to chemicals that are now recognized as impacting their health. Contact one of those organizations that are there to help you, including WDVA. I really appreciate you asking that question, Marcus.
And, you know, when we've talked over the years, Mary, something that has stuck with us is how you've stressed that there are many services available to veterans, but there's been this challenge connecting people with the appropriate help. What improvements have been made to ensure services are reaching veterans and their families?
Well, this past year, we held 6 mental health forums specifically focused on combating veteran suicide. They were held throughout the state. And I think there were actually hundreds of people who attended. And what was most impactful is, again, it's not just the government. It is working with state, local, federal, and nonprofits and others, people who are focused on being helpful. And what events like this, being on the radio and you're asking that question, there are people here to help. With claims, when people can go online, but it can get confusing, ask for help. We're here to help. And if, you know, you want to talk to someone local, again, county, the people at the county and the nonprofits, it's getting the word out. The 1-800, the call for the suicide line that you no longer have to do.
It's now 988. Yes.
Correct. And for veterans, press 1, and you're connected with a person who's specifically trained to assist veterans. So the changes to help people, the bottom line is getting the word out that you are not alone. Don't feel overwhelmed. What also is happening is the Department of Defense and the VA, the federal VA, are working together to connect veterans who are transitioning to the civilian world to help them connect with people where they are moving to. So, for example, Quentin Hatfield with VetsNet in Milwaukee, he already is helping people with mentors who connect with military members who are about to separate, and they can learn about Milwaukee and the benefits and services, the schools for their children. So we are doing better. We can always do more to do better, but we are continuing to expand our services and our outreach to veterans and their family.
Talking with Mary Kolar with us, retired as Secretary of Veterans Affairs last week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. I want to touch down on homelessness and that issue for a moment. The Institute for Community Alliances reports that about 10% of Wisconsin's homeless population are veterans. How can this disparity be addressed, be improved?
Yes, and so thank you for asking that. There's when we do the counts, and the count will be happening here soon, there are about 385 homeless veterans in Wisconsin. So we have that outreach and with increased funding from Governor Evers. But our Veterans Outreach and Recovery Program, we have currently, and the governor has just invested more to expand the program. Currently, we have 11 coordinators throughout the state who literally go out and find veterans in need, veterans who are homeless or about to become homeless. And I know we're running out of time, but I could tell more stories about how these coordinators have found veterans, worked with county veteran service officers, helped them get the assistance that they needed, helped them file a claim, find out they actually were eligible for some disability compensation, and help them with housing and get to a stable life.
Your successor has not been named yet by Governor Evers. What are the biggest challenges that they will have to face as secretary?
So we are focused on the homes with our residents who are our very valued customers who we want to ensure the best quality of life for them. And also all our other programs. This morning, we've talked about our homeless programs. We have education programs. We have grant programs. We are increasing that outreach. So again, when people don't know about our programs, we want to help them learn about the benefits and services that are available to them in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is one of the most generous states for our veterans and their families, and we want to make sure people know. I'm very confident that Governor Evers will appoint a secretary who will continue with his vision to provide the best service for our Wisconsin veterans and their families.
In our final moments together, do you have any advice for your successor?
It is that ongoing outreach. The pandemic set us back with going out and developing relationships. When my first year, I was on the road all the time, so it was hard on us to not go out and get the word out and develop those relationships with our partners throughout the state. So I will be very thankful that we don't have a pandemic to limit the outreach that we're able to do. We need to get out and have those conversations in Wisconsin communities so the word gets out. You're not alone. we are here to assist you and make sure that you get the benefits and services that you're entitled to as a veteran of our U.S. military.
Mary Kolar, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. It was great to be with you this morning.
Likewise. Mary Kolar, chief of the State Veterans Affairs Agency until retiring 1 week ago, joined Governor Tony Evers' cabinet in early 2019. Prior to that, she was on Dane County Board of Supervisors, and career in the U.S. Navy spanned 28 years. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With the 106th state legislature sworn in, we dig into assembly priorities with Speaker Robin Voss on the line. Some discussion points ahead of us: what to do with the state's historic budget surplus, education, tax cuts, state support to local governments, known as shared revenue. Call in along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Republican Robin Voss of Burlington has led the lower house of the legislature for a decade now, first elected to the assembly in 2004. Speaker Voss, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. You've been sworn in and the 106th session underway. You addressed the 24 new lawmakers sitting before you in the chamber on inauguration, and you took that occasion to say you hope for a reset of the legislature. What do you hope changes this year?
Well, I think we saw over the course of the past 4 years, it was a pretty contentious time in Wisconsin. We saw the Republicans in the legislature trying as hard as we could to push our agenda, the things that we ran in and we were elected to accomplish. We also saw Governor Evers doing the same, but frankly, not really working to be able to convince us of his priorities, just kind of dropping them on the legislature and hoping we would adopt them. So this time, I'm hoping we have an opportunity to sit down, try to find common ground on some of the topics where we have an intersection of our beliefs. Obviously, I'm not expecting him to sacrifice his principles. I hope he's not expecting us to sacrifice ours. And one of the things that I'm hoping for is, we heard from voters that they want us to find ways to work together. Well, one of the most important things of working together is realizing that there are some topics that are kind of toxic for the other side, and they will poison the well of goodwill. So we have some of those that we're looking to say, okay, you know, we believe strongly that we should have done election integrity measures, but Governor Evers obviously is opposed to those. And if we spent all of our time talking about election integrity for the next 4 years, it would kind of poison the well for our ability to find common ground on some topics. I would say the same thing for Governor Evers. If he believes that we're going to have recreational marijuana and that we're going to expand welfare, that we're going to increase taxes, all of those things would be just as poisonous to us. So my hope is that we focus on issues where there can be some bipartisan compromise and not try to throw just red meat to our base thinking that that is the way to govern.
What would be issue number one that would not poison the well of goodwill, as you say?
Well, I think there are really three topics where I think we could find some common ground. Look, we can have a whole lot of blame cast about why learning loss occurred under COVID. And again, that would be nothing more than, kind of throwing meat to the other side's base. But we do know that we have the largest number of kids who are not reading at grade level, really in our state's history. So when I think about the topic, we see since 2019, almost 2 out of 3 kids are not reading at grade level, and they're not doing math at grade level. You would think that'd be an area that we could focus on making sure every child is reading at grade level and that we also focus on what has to change in the way that we teach. We certainly know with all the one-time federal money coming in under the COVID measures from D.C., it's not about having enough money because they had gargantuan amounts. And in fact, with all that money, learning loss got worse. So that's one area that I think we should be able to find some compromise to change how we teach and ensure that every child can read. Because we also know that if you read at grade level in third grade, it's a very good indicator of whether or not you're going to graduate from high school.
But you need teachers in the classroom, and Wisconsin schools, both public schools and charter schools, are facing major teacher shortages. How would you address that?
Yeah, that's actually, you know, the funny thing is, Kate, though, it's every single career in Wisconsin, from the people who, you know, drive a bus to get somebody to work, people who work as a dental hygienist. I mean, literally every single career that you can think of, there is a shortage of people.
But and these are our kids. These are our kids. This is the future of Wisconsin.
You're right. And that's why every single career field has to make sure that it's a viable option. So I would love to ensure that we do a good job of adequately paying teachers. I think in most districts across the state, we already do that. Our pay is better than the national average. But that's something that I'm certainly willing to look at with Governor Evers to say if we can somehow tie it to performance, make sure that parents have an opportunity if they think their district is failing or the teacher in their district isn't meeting the needs of their child, that they would have more options than they currently do. So I think there's room for compromise there, again, knowing that the end result is trying to make sure kids can read.
So with the end result, kids reading, are there specific policies or programs you're going to put forward? Do you envision? I mean, how are you going to help kids get up to grade level specifically?
Yeah, we actually passed a bill last session. Believe it or not, Mississippi, about a decade ago, changed how they teach reading. They were the worst place in the country for child's reading scores. They changed how they taught kids, and now they are one of the better states in the entire country. So I think the answer is, again, not just simply more money, kind of doing more of the same. It's looking at what really works and changing. So we passed a bill last session. It was vetoed by Governor Evers, but my hope is to be able to sit down and say, okay, you know, if Mississippi has results that clearly show it works, tell me what your objections are. Maybe we can meet those objections and find a way to get him to say yes and the kids to have a program that would actually work.
Talking about state politics with Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss of Burlington. Join in with your priorities, 800-642-1234. We heard from Mike in New London, sent an email our way. Mike says there is no other topic looming larger than climate change and the health and well-being of their grandchildren and many people in this world. In 2019, Mike says the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported that you said climate change is probably real, but you are unsure. And Mike wants to know how the legislature, how the assembly plans to address fossil fuel use and climate change.
Well, the thing that I worry most about in this time of dramatic inflation caused by federal spending policies is making sure that families have the ability to afford to live in the houses that are already becoming more and more expensive. So I certainly do not want to make the cost of energy dramatically higher. We're already seeing that in Wisconsin, where because of the emphasis from Governor Evers and the PSC to go to more solar farms around the state, we are seeing a pretty big increase in electricity costs. So I think we have to be very careful to say that, yes, we have some ability to deal with some aspects of climate change. But again, when we now see that China and India are building and using more coal than they did even a decade ago, so as our numbers go down, their numbers go up. I do not want to have Wisconsinites sacrificing their economic future without a way to ensure that it's actually going to make a difference as opposed to just more virtue signaling.
Where would you put climate change then on your agenda? Where does it fit in?
It's very low, I'll be honest. I think that when we look at what climate change actually does, it's still unsettled as to how much effect the state legislature or the state of Wisconsin can truly have. I certainly think if individuals want to change their priorities, they want to change what opportunities they have, they should have the right to do that. But I do not believe that the government should be dictating higher costs on people who are barely able to afford to put food on their table or save for their kids to go to college.
Let's look at the state's projected $6.6 billion surplus, which has reignited the debate over tax cuts. What tax cuts are you urging? What is on the table for you?
Well, it's important for the listeners to remember that there really are two buckets of money that the state of Wisconsin is going to have to figure out what to do with. The first bucket is the surplus that you just said. That's real money. It is actually in our state savings account, and it's actually increased to almost $7 billion. So that is one-time dollars. You can't use one-time dollars to grow the size of government, and we have to make sure that we are very judicious about saying that somehow that can be used to, you know, have an increase in long-term spending. The second bucket is new revenue from the growth in the economy. That number is probably closer to $5 to $6 billion, and that will recur every budget going forward. That's the money that we'd use to reduce taxes, or you would use to invest in one of our state's priorities. So it's very important when people hear that surplus number that, yes, but that's money in the savings account that you wouldn't use, to increase your spending. You would use that to do some short-term or long-term things that are one-time expenses.
So with that, I mean, that's a good preview, but what is on the table for you?
Well, for the long-term dollars, I think, number one, we have to focus on having a reduction in the overall tax burden. As I've said before, when we had the last budget that Governor Evers signed, we had nowhere near the projected surplus or nowhere near the projected new revenue, and we were still able to reduce income taxes by the largest amount in state history. So I think we would at least want to set that as a benchmark to say it should be no less, considering the amount of revenue we have is even greater. I would say also, with the way that we have inflation, we need to do wage increases for state employees that are commensurate with kind of where the world is going. We want to make sure that if somebody decides to become a correctional officer or an assistant district attorney, that they see a potential for not only doing a great job for the citizens, but being able to support their families. So I think that's a priority. Making sure that we have enough funding for dealing with the issues that face Wisconsin. That's corrections, education, all of the different expenditures that are the primary drivers of our budget. Those are important too. So we'll have that discussion. Again, I hope that Governor Evers does not introduce a budget that's filled with things that aren't real. If he puts in a bunch of revenue from recreational marijuana knowing it's never going to happen, that instantly creates a big hole in the budget. Or thinking that we're going to expand welfare and use one-time federal money, that also would create issues. So my hope, and when I discussed it with him, was for him to introduce a realistic budget. Frankly, that's the way Governor Doyle did it when he was with a divided government. And I think that's a lot more productive than trying to just jam everything in there and then we throw it all out and start over.
We're going to get to marijuana. We'll put a pin in that for a moment. But you haven't mentioned flat tax. Where are you at with that?
I think that would be significantly better for Wisconsin than our current tax climate. We know that of the states that are around us, Illinois, Michigan, Iowa all have a flat tax, a Republican state, a Democrat state, and a newly turned Democrat state. We know that in Illinois, they tried to get rid of the flat tax by referendum, and even in a very liberal Democrat state like Illinois, it was defeated. So I think that would be good. I mean, one of the other challenges that I hope we could all agree on is we have a major demographic problem. Our state is graying faster than the national average, and we have not net new migration. So we have to try to keep people in Wisconsin. And when I see a lot of my friends and supporters and just people that I know who are moving to a warmer climate, we can't control the weather. But when you find out that it's significantly cheaper for someone to live in Florida or Arizona or Tennessee or Texas, we certainly can deal with the tax climate to try to keep more of those people in Wisconsin contributing to our long-term viability.
Are you concerned, though, a flat tax wouldn't give you, you know, a revenue neutral, a break-even point that would be a realistic tax cut for Wisconsinites at all income levels?
I think the way that Senator Lemieux was drafting it is that every single person in Wisconsin would receive some sort of a reduction in their taxes. But obviously, if you pay 10% of the taxes of somebody else, you shouldn't receive the same benefit. So I think that's where we are focused on, to try to say that the more you earn and the more you pay, naturally, the larger your tax cut. That's just basic math.
Robin Voss, Speaker of the State Assembly and a Republican from Burlington, as we discuss budget and policy priorities, how he envisions a divided government getting things done. Call in with your questions for the Assembly Speaker, 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the top-ranking Republican in the Assembly. Robin Voss is here, represents Southeast Wisconsin, including Racine and the surrounding area. Call in with your questions in light of the state's record surplus. We've been talking about what would benefit Wisconsinites in the next budget. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We heard from Dave in Cornucopia, sent an email, says the majority of Wisconsinites support legalizing marijuana. And Dave wants to know if you will support full legalization in response to what your constituents want rather than just medical cannabis.
I won't. I actually just got reelected with the largest number of votes that I've gotten in any contested race. And I was very clear in saying that I support a form of medical marijuana where it is very restricted. So it's only going to folks who have a true medical condition in a way that guarantees that we don't have any kind of being taken advantage of. So I think we could certainly try to find some consensus on medical marijuana. But the idea that Wisconsin needs to have recreational marijuana, I just don't support that.
So we saw last week comments by Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux suggesting that Senate Republicans are close to allowing medical marijuana in the state. Is that allowing your folks in the assembly a bit more leeway to push this issue? What do you see there?
I think most Wisconsinites recognize that, first of all, you know, one of the things that I've always tried to do is to start with the why. The reason that I support medical marijuana is because I want to ensure that people who have a true chronic medical condition have a way to access care that's done so in a safe way. So I think that's the compassionate way to look at it. It's not about generating a much more revenue for government to spend. It's not about creating a brand new industry for people to work in. It's really about finding a way for people who have an awful situation to give them one more tool to deal with it. So I think that should be what we focus on. And my hope is that as we work with our Senate colleagues, that is the emphasis. I don't want to generate a ton of new revenue, frankly. I hope that we can find a way that if somebody needs medical cannabis, we can do it in a way that is, frankly, cost neutral to the state. We don't generate a bunch of revenue off the backs of somebody who's sick. So I think there's a way for us to get it done, but we have a long way between here and there. And it's why I certainly hope Governor Evers doesn't focus all of his effort on recreational marijuana, which frankly scares away an awful lot of my constituents who certainly understand the need for a limited form of medical marijuana for people who are truly sick, but think we already have too many drugs in society, and that's the last thing they want to see happen.
Let's take a call here. Bob in Christiana. Bob, what's on your mind?
So, Assemblyman Speaker Voss, thank you for this moment to let you know, and you probably do know, that emergency medical services is in crisis in the state of Wisconsin, if not nationally. And certainly you addressed the health care, and Mary Kohler before you addressed the health care worker shortage. But it's pronounced, extremely pronounced, in the emergency medical field. I volunteered for 30 years in the Cambridge area as a volunteer EMT, and then I became director chief of the service for 10 more years. And the recruitment and retention is a huge problem. And I also sit as the chair of the Political Action Committee of WEMSA, Wisconsin Emergency Medical Services Association. And we really need some help through some adjustment of shared revenue or through some type of assistance to help 80%, well, it's 39 point whatever percent, which are still volunteer services in Wisconsin. And they have like 3, 4, 5 folks that are volunteering for a service, and they're on 24/7, and they're aging out. They're in their 70s. I'm in my mid-70s, and I just retired about a year ago. So if you can address that, we appreciate it.
Bob, thank you. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, Bob, thank you for volunteering. My own dad did volunteer EMT for most of my young adult life. He retired also from the Volunteer Rescue Squad. So I totally understand the passion and also the level of commitment that somebody like you has given. And so thank you for that. We are engaging in discussions right now. I have brought together the cities, the counties, and the towns as levels of local government to be able to talk about the most, I would say, hopefully the most robust investment in shared revenue that we've seen in generations. Because I do agree with you that if we are going to maintain our level of service, be it making our garbage pickups or the level of police and fire, we have to have more revenue to local governments. And with the this newfound revenue in the second bucket, I think we have the ability to make a historic investment. So I'm leading the effort to do that. I certainly agree with you that we have to have access to EMS services. I will say there's a little bit of a difference between making sure that we have adequate access for every single person in the state and trying to make sure that we have what the national goals are to have service within 2 or 3 minutes of every house. That's probably not affordable, but I think we're going to figure out a way to guarantee that everybody has access to the basic service we would all expect.
To head off a fiscal crisis, Milwaukee city and county officials are asking state officials for an increase in revenue sharing and the ability to levy a local sales tax. What is your response to that?
Well, and I will say this, for the folks who are currently in office, it is not entirely their burden to bear because of bad decisions that were made over the course of the previous 20 or 30 years. There were many times when the city of Milwaukee did not make a contribution to their pension, and then they have overestimated the rate of return. So they have really created their own huge financial boondoggle. But we can't let Milwaukee just fall off the side of the state. So I'm certain that we will come back looking for reforms to help them save revenue and to be able to invest in the long term, and potentially the idea that if we have enough reforms, we would match that with the ability to raise revenues to pay off that one-time, unique, special pension situation. Because every other public employee in the state is in the Wisconsin retirement system. Only Milwaukee City and County have their own, and the problem is it's been mismanaged. So we would have to ensure that those employees and the future employees go into the Wisconsin retirement system where they are significantly better managed than in Milwaukee. And maybe in exchange for that, with some other reforms, we would be willing to give them some revenue. But we're just in negotiations right now. It's really too early to tell.
Less than a minute left here. Kurt in Oshkosh called and said Wisconsin is an island. In Wisconsin, both abortion and marijuana are illegal, unlike surrounding states. And Kurt says this is discouraging people from coming to Wisconsin and from working and moving here. So where are you at with that?
I think that argument, while I know Governor Evers attempted to make it, really is kind of silly. The idea that someone's going to decide where to move to based on their access to abortion when they clearly come to Wisconsin because we have a great climate of entrepreneurship. We have a tax burden that's too expensive. There are other things that I think deter people from coming to Wisconsin that are much more easily solvable than trying to do things like that, which are clearly too divisive for a divided legislature.
You've talked about the idea of adding exceptions for cases involving rape or incest. Do you support adding these exceptions into the law?
I do. I mean, I've been trying very hard to say we need to find that common sense middle ground. I think most Wisconsinites do not support the idea of abortion for birth control. But if someone is the victim of rape or incest or the mother's life is in danger, I think most Wisconsinites also look and say that'd be an incredibly difficult choice, but one that we should give some flexibility to make. So I think there should be a middle ground. I'm disappointed that Governor Evers has said, again, either it's everything that I want or nothing. I think that's not very productive. And my hope is he reconsiders position, is willing to sit down with us and see if we can find that common sense middle ground where I think most Wisconsinites already are.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kate. Have a good day.
You too. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss of Burlington has led the chamber since 2013. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.